again. I am America.
I change America. I want to live in America and not just exist. I want to live in a country not fearful of the black fist or judges anyone based on the color of skin. We must all love each other if we're going to win. So you're blessed if you love, not hate. Stop complaining and appreciate the opportunity to live lovely in a global community where we love the differences because we're basically all the same. We all want to have respectable names. I write America.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
41
and to the republic
shot.
For which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice
for all.
Yes, the cast of Deaf Poetry Jam, and you've been listening to excerpts from an interview done with, not excerpts, readings, that was done by the cast, and of course, you can check them out at the, I think it's the Longacre Theater at 48th Street between Broadway and 8th Avenues. Check it out, it's very, very good. Anyway, we're going to the national board meeting, I assume, Max, and this is WBAI 99.5. FM on your dial.
To listen to the entire meeting replayed, and to tell you the truth, I just simply did not get finished. So they're not done. So we won't.
You did pass the bar.
Yeah, I did pass the bar.
So now we have three lawyers on the board.
But that's no excuse. I took that exam before the September meeting. So I can't beg off on that ground. I just simply didn't get them done, and I do apologize to the board. So we will have to approve the September meeting minutes at the next meeting of the board. The special board meeting minutes, where we've been doing bylaws, we have been just circulating notes because those are not official board meetings, even though we are all together. So I think there are no minutes to approve at the moment.
Yeah, I would like to, if I might, just ask that we not adopt the June minutes yet. I mean, for those of us who haven't had a chance to read it, at least let's see if by Sunday we can at least do a quick reading of them. And then come back to that later in the weekend.
I think it's about 40 pages because they're quite detailed. And yes, if you haven't had a chance to read them,
they're riveting.
But they're detailed.
I'm waiting for the DVD version to come out.
So I would just, okay. I don't know if we need a motion, but say let's table the issue of the minutes and.
Yeah, I don't.
So moved.
Okay, I don't think we need to vote on that. I think it's an agreement at the table.
Yep.
Is that okay? So let's move on. Okay, the next agenda item is a little report or some comments from me as the chair. Again, I just want to welcome the people who are listening to the broadcast and to the webcast. I had a kind of torturous time with myself trying to figure out what to say. Do I say what I'm really thinking? Do I sugarcoat things? Do I make nice? Do I focus on all the good work that's happened or focus on the difficulties that we've run into? So I don't know what this is going to end up sounding like, probably a little bit of all of that. But as I sat down to think about what I wanted to say, I happened to have my calendar on the desk in front of me and noticed that next Friday is the 1-year anniversary of the signing of the settlement agreement. And what a year it has been. Somebody, I was at a forum in New York a few weeks ago, and somebody introduced me as having been the chair of the board for the last several years or something. It's felt like about 10 years. I pointed out that it was actually technically less than a year, even though it felt like, very much more than that. And I think it is an appropriate time to take stock of what's happened in this last year. No, I am not going to review everything that's happened since the settlement agreement was signed. That's another matter, and I assume that Matthew Lazar is hard at work on that task. But I do think that we should all be reflecting on what this year has been, what we've done, and what we have yet to do. And as we look at ourselves and what's gone on, I think that it's very critical that we look at not only what's been accomplished, but also what there is still to do and what our strengths and our weaknesses are as we look at the problems and challenges ahead of us. To do this, though, in a way that makes sense, that isn't just gazing at our navels, I think we have to look at the context that we are in the country and in the world. And again, I'm not going to give a whole long speech about the state of the world, except to remind us that we are in probably one of, if not the most serious crisis in our lifetimes. People in Pacifica land, for the most part, have some handle on this or some understanding of it, largely or to some degree because of Pacifica. We are able to bring some news, some information, some insight, some challenge to the status quo. But there's a lot more that we don't know yet and that we haven't figured out how to teach ourselves and each other about. Suffice it to say, for purposes of this presentation right now, that we, I believe, have to look at the problems of the world, the crisis in the country and in the world, and that we have to figure out how to solve our internal problems in order to rise to the challenge. We fought, and I'm looking at who's at the table now. We fought to reclaim, and those of you in the room, we fought to reclaim Pacifica not just because we wanted to control a national organization with 5 radio stations. I believe we did it because we know that we have a role to play in terms of meeting the outside challenges and the crisis that the world we live in. That crisis has only gotten worse in this past year. And we are, I am sorry to say, very far from solving our own internal problems and therefore far from being able to really rise to the occasion and do the work that we really all know must be done. We have really only just barely started in this last year the process of rebuilding this organization. We are, for instance, not out of the woods financially. We have serious financial problems, although our listener donors have been extremely generous. Every single time we ask for money, somehow they find it and come up with it, and we applaud them for that and thank them for that. But we also know that we're not done asking for money. We are not out of financial woods. We're not drowning in debt, but we're not, we're not sailing financially in calm waters either. So that's a serious problem. And without stabilizing our finances, that puts a burden on us that makes it much harder to do some of the other work that we know must be done to rebuild this organization. The bylaws, we know, right? We'll talk about that a lot more tomorrow. We're not done with that. To say nothing of the election process that we were mandated to put into place, that's not done yet. We have all that kind of internal structural work, the governance work, or redefining the governance that is still before us, and that we have made some real headway on. I think the process on the bylaws, through that process, we have made headway, but we are not yet done. and on the question of programming, on the question of what one hears when they tune in to any of our stations. We have made some progress in each of our stations in reexamining how the programming speaks to and is a reflection of the mission of Pacifica, but we have not gotten too far in that work. We've not gotten very far in that work. So I don't want to undermine or ignore the progress that has been made, but we haven't yet even figured out how to do a system-wide or a station-by-station evaluation and review and analysis of the programming that we do have and what kinds of changes we would like to see. We haven't even figured out who the we is that needs to be answering those questions in terms of the broader communities that we want to relate to, that we do relate to and want to relate to. Having said that we are really just at the beginning of this process of rebuilding Pacifica, I also need to acknowledge that everybody that I know at each of the five stations, be they paid staff or non-paid programmers, lab members, community activists in the national office, at the archives, wherever people fit into this organization, everybody is on overload. So I'm not suggesting that we haven't made as much progress as we would have liked because people are lazy and we're not doing the work. It's just that I think on some level we were not clear a year ago at the time of that settlement agreement how massive a task it was going to be to rebuild this organization, to bring it back from the brink of financial disaster and to get out of the swamp that we had inherited that had been created by the previous leadership, or at least the problems that had been made worse by the previous leadership. So having said that we are on overload, and I do think we need to be patient with each other as we demand that all these issues be dealt with. We need a greater degree of patience with each other. We also need to find the way to make decisions and then move on, to try and settle some things, get them in place, and move on. We've had a little bit of a problem on some areas of making decisions, getting ready to move on, and then saying, let's go back and revisit those decisions. And I think that has slowed us down. It has been demoralizing to some of us, and has slowed down the overall project of rebuilding the organization. And I also want to say, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow, on the bylaw stuff, I actually believe we're at the point where not having resolved where we are with the restructuring of the governance and not having new bylaws before us is hurting this organization. We need to find the way to make whatever compromises we can live with without compromising our own core principles and values. We need to be able to compromise in order to set these new bylaws into motion. It is hurting us, and not the least of which, it is taking energy that we need to do all these other things away from those other things. People are spending hours and hours in discussions and email exchanges, I put it kindly, about bylaws, right, instead of hours and hours finding new sources of money, or hours and hours going into thinking about creative new programming. Not that none of that is happening, but all that energy that's going into bylaws, we need to tap into that for some of the other parts of rebuilding this organization. And I want to mention one other thing in relation to this part, and I mentioned it back in June, and I was criticized in, I thought, a somewhat sexist manner in some emails about the way I did this, but I am so alarmed at how we disagree with each other on how our debates, how our internal struggles unfold. We have not learned how to express our real differences. I'm not suggesting that we hide our differences from each other or gloss them over, but we have not made a lot of progress in terms of finding ways to say, I disagree with you, and not have that come across as sounding as if I think you're a bad person. Because sometimes that's how it's posed. That's why it comes across that way. It was, I think, interesting when you think about where we were a little more than a year ago when we were struggling for control of Pacifica. We knew that we had to work together if we were going to win this fight. And that meant that even with our differences, we found ways to work together. It didn't mean we all liked each other. It didn't mean we all went to the movies together on Saturday night or whatever. But it meant that we learned how, that we knew how to work together. And I think we have to understand that the rebuilding of this organization is also a struggle. And that we have got to find the way to work together. We simply have to. We need all of the players in the mix. We do not have the leeway or the leisure or the possibility of saying this group of people cannot be involved in the rebuilding of Pacifica because I disagree with them or you disagree with me. We have got to do better, and I'm sorry, I wish I had a formula for how to do better or a recommendation for how we could do better, but we have got to do better in how we have our disagreements with each other, how we engage in those struggles with each other. And let me just add one other layer to that, and I know this may sound ridiculously naive in some way, but really in my core, you know, heart of hearts, I really believe we have much more in common than the disagreements that we are now seeing playing out would have one believe, right? That when you think about our differences with the powers that be out there, you know, and I'm not only talking about the warmongering Bush administration, right, with the powers that be in a more general way, there is, I believe, much more that unites us, that brings us into the need, that helps us, if we think about it, find the way to work together. There's much more out there that we have in common than that divides us. What has been dividing us are really relatively small internal details. I'm not saying details are unimportant. We all know the devil is in the details. The details of how we govern ourselves is obviously a very important and a very political issue. But when you think about our differences around that compared to who's running the country, really we have a lot more in common than we sometimes might, than it might look like we do. So I really want to encourage us, again, I may sound a little Pollyannish or naive or whatever, but I really wanted to encourage us to think about the bigger context and what brings us to Pacifica. And why we have so much passion and energy and intensity, it's because of the world we live in and our, I believe, and our shared commitment to change that world. And that's why it's so important that we get it right about the rebuilding of Pacifica. That's my kind of overview of where we are. We, of course, have some very immediate challenges. We have a challenge to get through this weekend. In a civil way, we have a fairly thorough agenda to work on, and I believe everybody on this board has, you know, that we have learned a great deal about how to work more cooperatively as a board, and I think our interaction with those of you who come to the meetings has gotten better also. So we will, throughout the weekend again, allow opportunity for people to make their comments. It's important, I believe it's very important for us to hear what all of you have to say, what your questions and concerns and ideas are. But also, we again ask everybody to respect the need of this board to focus in on the work that we need to do when it's time in the agenda to cut off that general discussion and let the board speak. We hope you will respect us and let us move our work forward. I just want to wrap this up. It may sound like a strange place to end, but I was asked in an email the other day by somebody, I'm not even sure what city she was from, to just give a brief update on where we are with the Democracy Now! Contract. which, as we all know, has been a kind of controversial hot issue in this network. And I think it was raised for her because she saw the agenda that had been that was posted on, you know, on the listservs, and she noticed that there was no reference to it on the agenda, and she wondered what was happening. So just very quickly, the reason it's not on the agenda is that there is still not yet a body of issues to discuss as a board. The board, I think everyone will recall, some time ago agreed to set up a committee of the board, five of us on the committee, to look for a new lawyer to work with us. We engaged one lawyer who gave us some preliminary feedback. The committee and other people on the board felt that it wasn't thorough enough, the work that he had done. So then it took some time to engage another lawyer. All of these things took, you know, weeks and, you know, much longer than any of us expected. We did engage another lawyer who did a much more thorough review of everything connected to the Democracy Now! Contract. And just about 2 weeks ago, I think it was, gave us an initial report. The committee that is set up has not even had time, you know, just because of the holiday weekend and everything else, has not had time to discuss among itself its sense of what the meaning of that report is and what we want to do with it. The next steps are for the committee to have a conference call meeting or an in-person meeting, if maybe even this weekend if we can get together, to talk about how we want to proceed with the information we got from the lawyer. Then that will be brought to the full board in terms of a set of recommendations for how to proceed. And then once that is agreed upon, we will proceed. So that's all I really can say right now. It's not as if the Democracy Now! Contract issue has been ignored or forgotten or deep-sixed or anything. It just, like many other things, has taken longer than any of us expected. So that's just one concrete update. I think that that's probably all I want to say, except again that this has been an incredibly challenging year. And as we wrap up this year, we need to think really carefully about how long it's going to take us to move out of this interim period and into the new phase of the new Pacifica. And that means really focusing in on trying to resolve these bylaws and get them into place. That's it.
That was Leslie Kagan, the chair of the Interim Pacifica National Board, with her report.
Thank you. Don't applaud, just send money. Okay, I just want to again acknowledge that we are on the air, and we want to thank those people who are listening in New York at WBAI, here in Washington at WPFW, and we want to thank the managers and the program directors and the staffs at those stations for making sure that that happened. We will be on the air tomorrow and Sunday at KPFA in Berkeley, and part of tomorrow afternoon at KPFK in Los Angeles. And again, we are webcasting. So we want to again thank all the technical people who make that possible, and welcome all of you who are listening. We hope to bring you some exciting and dynamic radio through the course of this weekend. I think we should move on the agenda. The next agenda item is a report from Dan Coughlin, our executive director, who's sitting over here to my left.
Thank you very much, Leslie. I think I'll try to give folks a little bit of an idea of the bricks and mortar of the rebuilding process that you were just talking about. First of all, I would like to thank very much and acknowledge the hard work of the national office staff, Joyce Snowden, Yasmin Bryan, Melissa Johnson-Bay, Robert West, Brian Gibbons, not just for helping to put together this board meeting, but I think if my math is correct, Leslie, this is the seventh board meeting that the Pacifica National Board has held this year, including the two bylaws meetings, if I'm correct. So it's been quite a task. I think it's seven. We'll see.
Six or seven.
Okay. I want to... is it seven, Carol? Oh, this is the eighth, my gosh, okay. It's been a heck of a year. I wanted to start off my board reports, as usual, with a focus on the network's finances. Let me take this opportunity again to underscore to everyone that the number one priority of the national office over the next year will remain ensuring the financial stability of the network. While we've made significant strides this past 11 months, enormous challenges lie ahead. The good news is that station fundraising is nothing short of stunning. This past fall, the network registered its third consecutive record fund drive, with Pacifica's California and Texas stations leading the way. In fact, Pacifica's California stations have basically doubled their on-air revenue in the last 10 months. This is truly remarkable, and I think really requires some investigation on the part of all of us to figure out how that happened, because we sure would love it to happen every year all around the network. But it is a remarkable achievement. KPFA, 94.1 FM in Berkeley, for the first time in its 53-year history, raised more than $1 million in on-air pledges this fall. Many congratulations and thanks to the entire KPFA community. WBAI in New York also registered a $1 million drive, the second this year, and KPFK in Los Angeles posted a record $820,000 in on-air pledges this fall, and I'm told that the station will be going for the $1 million mark in the winter. So hopefully we'll see three of our stations doing amazing fundraising. Obviously, this kind of fundraising has led to a dramatic improvement in the network's financial position. The stations are, generally speaking, in very good shape. Cash flows are solid and accounts payables are well within the 0 to 60-day range. But we still face serious problems on the national level, notably a debt of about $1.4 million in legal and professional service bills. More than $260,000 of that debt, a serious burden, is being worked off with the help of the five stations in the first 6 months of this fiscal year. Still, the national office cash flow problems are not simply due to this legal debt. We deferred many of our spring and summer bills, including payments to Democracy Now!, to the post-October 15th period, and some of our major FY03 expenses, like insurance premiums, need to be paid up front. We also have a series of new obligations, as Leslie alluded to, including the board meetings this fall, new legal obligations related to some old personnel and professional service firm matters, a huge hike in insurance premiums, a sharp decline in affiliate revenue, and a drop in CPB funding for two of our stations, KPFK and WBAI. And that drop in CPB funding for those two stations is due primarily to what happened in 2001, a decline in revenue and audience. We are appealing the KPFK decision because we believe that the audience decline in Southern California had to do with some interference from other stations broadcasting on KPFK's frequency. In short, Pacifica must remain fiscally disciplined over the next year. Nobody wants to look at more cuts around the network. We want to develop and grow, and that means that the national network is going to have to continue to call on our local stations for support and for continued fundraising aggressiveness. Furthermore, in the wake of the decentralization of the network's finances, we are also calling on our stations to take full responsibility for ensuring that financial record keeping is accurate and timely. In other news around the network, we are scheduled to move the national office back to California in March 2003. The fiscal year 2002 audit, which has been happening here in Washington, has already started and is slated to be finished in February. Pacifica's national office space in the Bay Area will be available in the new year, and plans are well underway to vacate our office space in Washington, D.C. We will be hiring new national staff over the course of the next few months, including a controller and a national development director. Interviews for those positions are due to begin shortly. I'm confident that we can locate the kind of staff that will help us manage the network effectively and put the best possible programming on the air. As part of this process, I'm thrilled that Valerie Van Isler will be joining the national office after 12 years as WBAI general manager. Her wealth of experience and proven track record of achievement is and will continue to be an invaluable asset to Pacifica and the national office. On a related note, Valerie's successor at WBAI, esteemed journalist Don Rojas, will be at the board meeting tomorrow, and I know you will join the national office in giving him a warm welcome. Elsewhere around the network, we are moving aggressively and systematically to rebuild. In my last board report in Houston 3 months ago, I outlined 6 key building blocks for the new Pacifica. These were 1, local and national news programming, 2, training and apprenticeship programs, 3, new media technologies, 4, the Pacifica Radio Archives, 5, the network's physical plant and technical infrastructure, and 6, affiliate relations. So let me go through these 6 areas briefly with you tonight. First of all, I'm pleased to report that local news initiatives are actively being developed. News training is ongoing, and strong links are being developed with free speech radio news teams nationwide, and I'm sure you'll be hearing about this in station reports on Sunday. We are also laying the foundation for a robust news and public affairs presence here in Washington, D.C. With the Pacifica National Office transitioning back to California, Verna Avery Brown will assume responsibility for national programming here as Washington Bureau Chief. Already, Verna has been producing a number of specials and, in conjunction with our local stations, a daily 1-hour program covering the Iraq War Drive and the growing worldwide peace movement. Our most urgent task over the next few months, apart from the finances and the bylaws, will be dealing with programming. We need to reach out to our allies, to partner with other community radio outlets and progressive media organizations, to build a stronger independent news service at this critical time in our history. We can't do this job alone. At the same time, and as a critical part of the rebuilding process, we must begin discussion on a new programming paradigm for the network. Academics, staffers, board members, and other media activists are organizing around this issue, and we hope to be having a series of programming conferences in the very near future. In conjunction with New College of California, we will be holding a seminar on rethinking the news in February, where we will be gathering together to talk about our practice, our resources, and our talents. Still, whatever programming model we adopt, the reality is that Pacifica's internal crisis of the last few years negatively impacted personnel. Talented staff have left the network, and Pacifica's editorial capacity has been seriously compromised. So as we rebuild, we need to ensure that we rebuild with a strong, diverse base of producers who can sustain the network for years and decades to come. Indeed, if we are to establish a viable media outlet for underserved communities and to reach out to communities that are currently unaware of Pacifica's existence, we will need to create new structures that reflect Pacifica's missions. Right here in the network, we do have a community-driven model that has a proven track record of training broadcasters while insisting upon bridging the barriers of diversity. KPFA's First Voices Apprenticeship Program is a long-term structural initiative designed to provide an equitable path for access and training. It is both an invitation and a greeting to underserved communities. And we are presently adapting the First Voices curriculum, the instructor's handbook, and other documents to be implemented at Pacifica stations around the system. A critical part of this apprenticeship program and our broadcasting model is the third keystone in the rebuilding of Pacifica, new media technologies. Already we've seen 5 completely revamped Pacifica websites emerge in recent months, and it is a key goal of ours to further integrate our programming into the Internet across all Pacifica stations. This is absolutely critical to the network's future. I know at the recent November 19th Pacifica Archives Day that raised about $180,000, just off the web alone, they raised $25,000. I think Brian will be talking about that some more. And so we could see how effective the Internet is not only as a source of information and communication and dialogue, but also it helps out with meeting some of the network's critical needs. Over the past few months, some major changes have happened at Pacifica.org, and over the next few months, we'll see even more. After beginning a complete rehaul of the old site, we are now introducing online forums. We also plan to offer a secure web-based email. Most importantly, we are planning for Pacifica to own and maintain the mail services for security and confidentiality, a critical requirement in the present political climate. But in this digital age, we're not forgetting our bread and butter. We must maintain and strengthen Pacifica's physical infrastructure. At KPFK Los Angeles, brand new studios are being built as part of the physical overhaul of that station. The new transmitter is broadcasting at 110,000 watts, and most of the teething problems have been worked out. Again, many thanks to listeners all across the country who rallied to defend and save that transmitter in the early part of this year. It's now broadcasting and up and running and broadcasting the Pacifica signal all throughout Southern California. At KPFA, a new transmitter and antenna project is now also being launched, and all stations are completing their inventories, which will give the network a better assessment of our physical condition. And as you all know, the Pacifica Archives continues to go from strength to strength. We had an enormously successful National Day of Fundraising. November 19th generated some $180,000 in pledges, as well as a plethora of positive news stories on Pacifica's national and international treasure, the 47,000 tapes documenting the last 50 years of North American history. November 19th has allowed the archives to begin the critical preservation work which is so urgent. Our goal, though, is more. We want to be able to develop and launch a strategic fundraising campaign that will enable the archives to properly acquire, catalog, store, and digitize this treasure. Ultimately, our objective is to make the archives self-sustaining. The final keystone to Pacifica's immediate future is, of course, our affiliate program. When the new administration took over, there were only 17 affiliates left. Today, that number has more than doubled. Taking into account small victories, taking into account all Pacifica-related programming, we believe another 30 affiliates across the country are open to rejoining the network by the end of next year. Affiliate rates have been reduced to two-thirds of the 1997 levels, and all affiliates have been offered a new contract. This is an important recognition on the part of Pacifica that our service to and relationship with the affiliates has been less than satisfactory in the past. And we also recognize that we have a long way to go. But as we rebuild our programming and our network infrastructure, I am certain that we can relaunch a stronger, more effective relationship with the community radio movement than ever before. Earlier in my report, I talked about the amazing fundraising that's been happening at the local stations. Yes, of course, this is due to factors like the war, the deepening economic crisis. Just today, unemployment figures were released at 6%. And, of course, the growing restrictions on civil liberties, and people are turning to Pacifica for those reasons. But I also believe that listeners around the country are responding to the new Pacifica, to the fact that all of us are making progress in revitalizing this network, that we are moving forward with integrity and seriousness, that we're preparing ourselves for the battles that lie ahead, and that we have a vision for a new democratic media organization. Yes, we have our work cut out for us, but Pacifica is back on track, and listeners around the country are again relying on the network as a source of information and inspiration amidst the storm clouds of war. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. Well, obviously there was a lot you brought up there. We do want to take some time to see if there are any questions.
Again, that was Dan Coughlin, the executive director of Pacifica, with his report to the board.
Our VHers, thank you. George.
Dan.
No plugs on the air.
Sorry, George.
Sorry. It's George Barnstone from Houston, Texas. Dan, I put you in contact with some folks at the ACLU about working together. How's that going?
It's interesting you should mention that. Just today we had a meeting with all the general managers and program directors in town for this weekend's meeting. And the issue, I would say that everybody felt a real sense of urgency for the necessity of Pacifica to respond to the growing restriction on civil liberties all around the country and the establishment of the Homeland Security Agency. And there was a number of different responses that we talked about. And, in fact, we're going to develop some plans to try to respond effectively to this crisis, whether including throwing out the ideas of actually hiring a beat reporter for all of our stations to contribute to all of our stations a daily reportage on what is happening with Homeland Security and on the throwing away of the Bill of Rights that is happening today. In addition, we also really looked at the issue, as I mentioned in my report, George. We can't tackle these kind of problems alone. We need to partner with other organizations, progressive organizations, social justice organizations, progressive media groups, and I think the work that groups like the ACLU are doing, the Center for Constitutional Rights, people all across the country in standing up and fighting for basic liberties is the type of thing, is where we have to work as well in the future. But I'm hopeful that as our financial situation improves, that we can really launch some very serious initiatives. And I know the general managers felt that urgent need as well today.
Well, that's exactly where I'm going. As you recall, we had a conference call, the three of us, you and one of the national staff people from the ACLU. Mm-hmm. My question to you is, what has happened after that? I mean, I took the initiative, I got you in contact with that person, and what's happened since? Mm. What have you done to work with the ACLU to help protect our Bill of Rights with Pacifica?
Well, we had a great conference call with ACLU, like we have discussions with all sorts of groups and organizations working around the country. The ACLU has a particularly effective national campaign, Safe and Free campaign, which I think is very important, which many of our reporters and producers all around the system have relied upon on a daily basis for critical news and information to inform their programming, whether it's a morning show in Los Angeles or a free speech radio news in the evening. So I know those relations are being built on a day-to-day basis between our reporters and producers all around the system with groups like the ACLU, with groups like the Center for Constitutional Rights.
And what I'm asking you is, you know, you spoke to that gentleman whose name I don't recall right this second, and what was the follow-up? What happened after you spoke to him?
We talked some more. The ACLU sent us some information, some press packets on their Safe and Free campaign, and we're trying to build on that relationship, George. There's nothing concrete there right now except to say that we're working with groups all around the country, including the ACLU, on developing and enriching our programming so that we can cover this issue better.
Okay, David.
Dan, I'm really pleased to hear that that Verna Avery Brown is going to be heading up a news bureau here in D.C., and that Valerie Van Eisler is going to be working with you. But just two quick questions for clarification. One of the things I've seen in Pacific, I know for a while it was being taken away from being a volunteer-based organization by the prior regime. We're trying to reinstitute greater obligation of the human resources that we have in terms of the volunteers and other talented people willing to work with us. And I'm wondering, with relation to Valerie Van Eisler, first of all, I guess, what is her portfolio going to be? And then second of all, I know she brings an extraordinary wealth of administrative skills to the national office. I'm really enthusiastic about that. But also, Verna Avery Brown in the News Bureau, how's that going to take shape? Because I think it's an extraordinarily valuable resource for us to exploit.
Yeah, the problem right now, Dave, is what I was mentioning earlier, and I think what Leslie touched on as well. We're trying to balance with the general managers and the program directors all around the system the absolute urgent need for Pacifica to respond to the national and international crisis that exists today, that we need to get reporters down to the White House, down to the Pentagon, asking the tough questions, finding out what's happening, talking to organizations like the ACLU around the country, integrating the work that other progressive media organizations are doing, doing what we've done for 53 years and for what Pacifica has built a tremendous reputation for. At the same time, we have to recognize, unfortunately, the financial limitations of the organization. So there's going to be limits to exactly how much we can do. I know we all want to do more, and I can tell you there is a public clamor in front of my door for us to do much more programming around the war. And we hear that, and the general managers hear that, and we're going to try to respond in a much more serious way. Just today, we talked about what kind of planning we're going to do if and when, God forbid, that young men and women are going to start dying in Iraq and from the U.S. armed forces if that war begins. how we're going to respond to that. We're looking at a network-wide response, very similar to the round robins that happened before. So we're trying to bridge that gap of having some, you know, serious financial problems staring us in the face and the need to fulfill our mission.
That's what I was getting at. Is Verna going to be training people? She's a great journalist and a talented reporter. Is she going to be training volunteers to do that? Because I don't see us hiring six people.
You're going to hear more about these incredible trainings that are happening all around the system in Houston, in Washington, D.C. especially, our two stations that are building up local news departments. I walk into WPFW now in the evening. You see 30, 40 young people learning radio skills, learning broadcasting skills, did new digital technologies.
That's great.
And that's something that is happening all around the network. But the problem is it takes a little while to flower, just like our whole work has the last 10 or 11 months. And I know Verna has been very much part of that. WBAIX folks have been very much part of that. WPFW staff, Free Speech Radio News, they've been doing trainings all across the country in Houston. Houston now, KPFT in Houston is really turning out a lot of programming for us on the national level. And so are the folks at WPFW. It's fantastic what people are doing on a shoestring budget. But going back to the training issue, when I talked about the First Voices apprenticeship program, unfortunately Janice K. Bryant is not with us, and we wish her a speedy recovery. But that is we have to think when we rebuild about longer term issues, that when we put down a brick, that it's for the long term, because we are really building this network back from the foundation up. And this apprenticeship and training program, the First Voices model that's been working at KPFA for 20 years, is something that is you have to build for 3 to 5 years down the line. To come into that program, you have to make a year-long commitment. So we're looking both at taking some real structural initiatives around training and apprenticeship, as well as trying to meet our more immediate needs.
Before I consummate that, people obviously listening to this don't see that there's some trays of food up here on the tables for us. But if anybody in the room wants food, there's some on the back, or come up to the front. You know, there's enough here to share with everybody. So, okay, there's some vegetarian and some non-vegetarian available. It's available for you.
You're listening to the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting in Washington, D.C., here on WPFW in Washington, D.C., and WBAI in New York.
First of all, Dan, I want to thank you.
This is Carol Spooner from the Berkeley area.
This year has been incredibly demanding and challenging, and much more so than perhaps any of us in our wildest dreams imagined. Although maybe we should have imagined.
I have a few hairs left.
All right, but
you're not going gray as fast
as I am.
Yeah, okay. Before and after photographs.
Right. I have a question that has nagged in my mind all year long, and I know when you talk about frequently when you're asked about our progress, you're very focused on the news, and that is so important. When I think about restoring Pacifica to fulfillment of our mission in all five stations, I think about a lot more than news. I think about, in addition to news, what we're doing 24/7. And we're certainly not ever going to be doing news 24/7, but we will be doing cultural programming, wonderful diverse music, public affairs programming, ecological programming, and so forth. And one of the things that I hear from listeners around the country is that we are not restoring our public affairs programming at a sufficiently rapid rate to suit them, both in several of our stations. Although they're pleased with the progress that we have been making, they want more. They feel they deserve more. They feel that they lost a lot that has not come back yet. And I, at the national level on the national board, we don't, quote, interfere with programming decisions at a local station. But I'd like to know if you have discussed this issue with the station managers, program directors around the country, if there is a policy about or a direction that you're trying to build so that the five stations will be looking at this issue proactively, and what's the progress there?
Yeah, it's a couple good questions. First of all, in terms of public affairs programming, news and public affairs programming is very expensive. That's part of the problem in terms of rebuilding that kind of production. It's difficult in a financial sense. For instance, we just 9 months ago closed down, unfortunately, our national news unit due to financial reasons, and it's going to take us a while to rebuild any kind of national news programming in the longer term. I don't know if I'm really answering your question there. But
I wanted to say it was things like the many hundreds of volunteers who did, say, a weekly or a monthly public affairs program on some topic that doesn't cost us any money, whether we're working to restore that in any kind of focused way.
I think all around the network there is a recognition on the part of program directors and general managers today. When we were, for instance, at our meeting, you know, the entire meeting was focused on, or most of the meeting was focused on, how we can respond in terms of our programming to the present crisis that is happening, the deepening economic crisis, the growing restriction on civil liberties, the drive or for what appears to be an endless war in the country, and how important it was for us to deepen our response to the international crisis, and especially our relationships with other partner organizations around the country. I think in the longer term, again, I don't want to put all of our eggs in the one apprenticeship and training basket, but there's a model for us to look at restoring the radio craft, restoring the radio arts, restoring basic editorial skills, and I think as we develop those kind of programs and take those kinds of initiatives, you're going to see the increased capacity of our stations to be able to produce the kind of news and public affairs programming that is so important. It just doesn't fall out of the sky, as you know. It's developed, nurtured, created at the grassroots level, and that's what we have to do as we rebuild the network.
Yeah, Jabari. The mic is not on.
Number 9.
We got it. We're announcing it. Mike? Okay, Jabari's mic isn't on.
Number 9.
Why don't you use Dan's mic? Or mic number
Jabari,
eight.
Jabari Zakiya from Washington, D.C. will speak next.
This is Jabari Zakiya. I have laryngitis, so that's why I don't sound my normally effervescent self. I have a concern about the continual acidic and corrosive relationships that are currently working themselves out and have been at many of the stations. And with regard to accomplishing the mission, I see these things as a continual erosion of the capacity for the stations to work in a focused way toward doing what is necessary. And these things have taken up a lot of people's time and energy. What do you propose, and what are you proposing to do? Because I see ultimately, at some point, some of these people who have associated themselves with Pacifica, who have continually acted in a way to retard the growth and the functioning of the foundation, really need to be, if not shunned away, pushed away, so that we can get on with the mission. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I'll echo a little bit about what Leslie said today, but also I want to point out that we are an organization with a mission. We are a political organization, and that means that all of us part of this organization have a political responsibility. We are a lifeline to many tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of people every week in this country, a political lifeline providing news and information that can inspire and educate and lead to action. So when you're part of this network in or part of a radio station, we look to everybody to accept that responsibility and that challenge. And part of that means that we want to create work environments that are not hostile, that are not threatening, that are not filled with intimidation, and we will do what is necessary to protect, to make our workplaces as safe and as non-hostile as possible. And we have begun to take steps to ensure that. But at the same time, let me say this, that so, for instance, in Houston, we have a code of conduct, the pilot code of conduct, for the first time in 9 months since the new administration has taken over. And we're looking at that code of conduct and implementing it in an impartial, independent way that has what I believe to be is a primacy of due process. Those are my immediate comments on that issue, but happy to take some other questions.
Does anybody on the board have any other questions? Okay, I'm sorry, Teresa.
Can you give me some more specifics about CPB funding? You said that it had been reduced. What has it been? Can you say what specifically it has been reduced to? How has that affected individual stations? What do we do with the CPB money? And what can we expect next year?
Just off the top of my head, I don't have, I can't recall the exact figures, but it looks like at WBAI, their CSG Community Service Grant Award was expected to be about $430,000 this year. That's been reduced to $380,000. At KPFK, we had anticipated a community service grant award of around $230,000. That's down to about $185,000. So in both cases, they both dropped $50,000. The formula used to calculate what is part of your community service grant depends on a number of different factors, including how much fundraising a station does and what that station's audience is. And based upon a complex formula, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting comes to an amount, awards a certain amount to a station. But because in 2001, 2 years ago, or nearly 2 years ago, a little less, at the height of the crisis, the legal and political crisis of the network, obviously people were not giving money to the stations, and we're tuning off the network, and therefore audience figures and the fundraising went down, and that's now reflected in some of these figures. However, especially at WBAI, which had a drop of I think about 8% in its total fundraising in FY 2001. So that's why those figures went down. We think we can correct that, and not only we think we can correct that, I think the folks at WBAI have done an amazing job to change that, and you'll see those figures reflected next year, not this year. But with Los Angeles, there's all been an ongoing issue for many years with another radio station that is interfering with KPFK's broadcast, with its transmission, with its frequency in Southern California. And we have sought to prevent that other station from doing this, but it's proven to be very difficult, and that's led, we believe, to a decrease in audience, which is now reflected in the CPB grant. So we're going to appeal that. We have hundreds of emails and complaints, listener complaints from all across Southern California talking about interference in that signal, which we're going to deliver to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to say that we shouldn't be penalized for this action that is happening against us. So we're hopeful that maybe we might be able to restore that a little higher. But we think back for next year in FY 2004 that those community service grant awards will be increased.
If I could, with regard to Dave Furtick, with regard to the KPFK signal, is it correct, and my understanding, that the signal was also at reduced power, but that since Well, that the reduction in the grant from CPB was based largely on the early beginning of the year Arbitron ratings as well, and that those have gone up, or that the listeners' numbers have gone up since we went from about, what, 10 or 20,000 watts back up to 110,000 watts.
Well, that's not at all clear from the CPB yet. I mean, officially, they've just told us officially that it's due to an audience drop in 2001, and they haven't actually specified anything, an official sense, anything further. So I would be hesitant to actually speculate exactly as to the problem, though we're working closely with the CPB, who actually have been very helpful, very supportive.